This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast.
Hello, and thank you for downloading episode 243 of the USEA's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, we're going to discuss how to winterize your horse, how to prepare for the change in season, whether your horse is stabled or living out. We'll get a rider's perspective from Emily Bashir, and then later on we'll hear from her husband, Dr. Jeff Bashir, who will share with us a veterinarian's perspective. And finally, on this week's episode, we continue our series of past presidents as we count down to our 60th anniversary celebrations at the annual convention in December. And we'll be hearing from Kevin Baumgartner, who was president from 2008 to 2010. But we begin with Virginia-based rider and trainer Emily Bashir. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for making time to do this.
Happy to be here.
Well, obviously seasons are changing now. It's suddenly starting to get a bit colder, and everybody's thinking, okay, our horse is going to be let down after the season. Are they going to be kept in work a little bit? But how do you start to plan for those changing seasons in Virginia?
Well, Virginia is one of those places that can fluctuate so dramatically day in and day out. I think number one is just getting to know each horse, their comfort level, and then watching them as the temperatures start to change. My feeling is that it's best to keep the horses as natural as possible for as long as possible. I think they do pretty well on their own. So certain horses tend to grow quite a lot of coat no matter what we seem to do for them. And certain horses don't do much at all. So it really does depend on the individual horse. But I do like to go into the season, keeping them as natural as possible, doing as little blanketing as possible early on in the fall, and letting their bodies just adjust naturally as best they can.
So we're seeing now in the middle of October, those changes in the temperatures. The temperatures are dropping and getting cooler overnight. Is this the end of the season for you then? Is this the time when you let your horses down?
Again, it really depends on the individual horses. We have some horses that will be staying in consistent work, some horses that are ramping up to some big competitions, and then we'll have a bit of a break. So the horses that are doing, still competing quite a lot and going to some big competitions, I will tend to clip those horses when they start to grow a bit of a coat and keep them comfortable during the harder work. I think it's hard to keep them comfortable when they have a decent coat on and they're working hard. So the horses that are competing will be clipped and will be blanketed and monitored pretty closely. Those that are staying in just a regular work and maybe backing down on their work will go a little longer before we start making any changes.
Right. Now, obviously, each horse is individual, Emily, but you think about the different types of horses, you know, from your warmbloods to your thoroughbreds,
right,
for example. Give us a general sense of how these climates, well, not just climate change, but the weather, the seasonal changes affect them, and what you are particularly observant about then come the fall.
Personally, I feel the horses do best when they stay out as much as possible. There are specific horses that just don't like being out that much, but I feel that I'd almost prefer that when the weather starts to change, I turn the horses out, starting off with the idea that they keep kind of a limited amount of blanketing done, because I feel if they're out moving around, they can regulate themselves a bit. You know, if they start to get a bit of a chill, they can move around a little more. But there are certainly horses that are affected quite a bit by the cold, and, you know, you'll notice them just being a bit more agitated or shivering or something like that. And then we adjust pretty quickly as far as what they need. I found that we have a pretty good system in how we blanket the horses, the more sensitive horses. We have a very lightweight sheet that they can go out in. And then late in the evening when the sun starts to go down, we can go out and layer blankets over top. But I do feel that letting them be out moving around does quite a lot for them to be able to meet their own specific needs, especially if they have a shelter. So we don't have to worry as much about if there's any precipitation and they don't have as much on, then they can stay comfortable and go where they need to go.
Yeah, because cold is one thing, but wet and cold is another, isn't it, with them?
Exactly. So if they don't have a shelter, I always make sure that they have some sort of cover on, even if they have a decent coat. Even our retired horses, you know, in the wintertime, we make sure that they have some sort of a protective barrier from the wet. I think that's always the biggest thing.
Now, what about my point about, the thoroughbreds, the thinner skin to the warm bloods? Do you notice a difference with them at all once you start to turn them out, or if they've been going out at all, then they maybe don't notice the change so much? But if you're starting to let them down, do you notice any changes?
I do, but honestly, I don't know that I notice as much of a difference between the breeds as much as just the individual horses. And we have some thoroughbreds that grow thick coats and seem really hardy, and then we have some warm bloods that are shivering at the 10-degree change in temperature. So it really does. We have quite the variety here. So I think it does make a difference, certainly, but it does really depend on the individual horse and noticing what they seem to adjust to well. Some of them do like being inside overnight better when the temperatures start to get cold. They are much more comfortable being out in the warm weather. So it really does come down to knowing the horse.
Right. And what about feed and water, of course? As they spend more time out, once you're letting them down, they're spending more time outside. Give us some ideas of what the members should be looking for. What are these riders, maybe got horses for the first time even, that maybe they've had their first event season, what they should be aware of with the nutritional and water intake?
Well, absolutely, the forage is number one to me. And this time of year, the grass isn't growing anymore. And people may think, oh, the horse is outside, they're fine. There's green versions of something out on the ground, they'll be fine. But you really need to make sure they get plenty of forage. I like the horses going into winter to have a little more weight on them than maybe you would think an event horse should or could, especially if they're going into a bit of a break. And I think that good, solid forage is number one. So, you really have to make sure that they have a good hay supply wherever they're located. We have a lot of different ways that we feed hay out in the paddock so that they're not wasting it, but we're making sure that they're getting plenty to eat whenever they want it. And water is absolutely key as well. So making sure that it's not just available, but that it's clean and refreshed all the time. We do quite a lot with automatic waters, but still making sure that those have the proper water supply and that the horses know how to use them. And, when the weather really starts to change, making sure that if there's freezing temperatures overnight, that there's a good system in place to make sure that they have access to their water all the time.
Now, what about the watering outside? It's easy, obviously, with automatic watering inside, but outside, though, you mentioned that the importance of changing it, keeping it fresh, and keeping the water receptacles clean as well. But then they're going to start freezing over as well, aren't they? So how do you cope with that?
Right. Oh, it's an ongoing battle, I'll tell you. We have quite a few different options, but obviously the best is if people have a way to heat the water tanks. We use some of those plugs that go in the bottom of the water tank and, can run electrical cords to them. There are other places where we're lucky in Virginia in that we don't tend to have a lot of really, really hard freezes where it'll be frozen for days in a row. So we can get by even with regular water tanks. One of our go-to things is to take a travel jug of hot water and take it out and pour it over any ice that's forming, so that instead of having to break the ice away and refill the tanks all the time, we can just melt the ice and give them fresh water that way. So that's one way that we do it in some of the smaller areas, if there's just one or two horses at a time. But I've tried a lot of different tricks. I don't know that there's any easy solution to it other than just really being adamant that you find a way to keep the water from freezing over.
Have you found a solution to reduce the hay wastage when they're out, Emily?
Yes, we have tried a lot of different things in that regard as well. And we've actually found these, not even certain what the brand is. It might be the Tartar brand company, but there are these hay baskets that we use now and we put in the fields. And it's basically a suspended giant plastic basket that is deep enough that the horses don't pull the hay out of it easily. And there are thin grooves in it all the way through to let any water through. So those have been fantastic. They also make some hay rings that are out of a black PVC pipe. So instead of the kind that are metal that really make me nervous with horses, there are some that are black PVC pipe that you can put out in the fields, and then you can move both these things. You can move around the field so that if horses stand in one place, they don't end up making a big mud hole in the middle of your paddock. And both of those work fantastically. The hay rings work great when there are fields with multiple horses, and we don't feed round bales. We just, you know, we can put two or three of these hay rings out in the paddock and, you know, put multiple bales of hay in them if we want to, and feed large quantity of horses at a time. And then the baskets actually fit a full bale of hay in them as well. And there's very little waste. They're fantastic.
Now, what about hard feed? How do you feed hard feed outside?
Well, most of ours, we're fortunate to have situated our farm so that most of the horses are out by themselves, so we can feed whatever they need individually. We tend to put feed buckets up along the fence line and then put rubber mats underneath, so if they make a mess dropping their feed out, they don't waste it. They don't waste any of their supplements, and just go about it that way.
Okay. Any other advice that there, Emily, for anyone who, you know, may be dealing with a winter, maybe in a new location, you know, maybe a more severe winter or a wetter winter? The season's changing constantly, you know, within the seasons too, from extreme weathers.
Sure.
Any other advice to cope with this? Of course, there's mud fever. There's all kinds of things that can happen below the knee, right? There's so many things that can go wrong.
Right. I think being one step ahead of the wet weather is important. We tend to use different products on our horses' feet daily to keep them hard enough and make sure that they don't fall into that trap of the thrush and things that come with the wet weather. And, you know, even if the horses are happy being out quite a lot, getting them into a dry location is important, at least for several hours a day. So ours tend to stay out overnight and come in for the day. And right when they come in, they get their legs washed off. The moment they come in the barn, they get their feet washed off so that they have at least several hours a day where they're dry and clean, and we can address any of the things that might be starting to appear. I think noticing any of those things, whether it's on their legs with different skin conditions or in their feet getting soft or getting thrushy, noticing that stuff early is the key to it. And then, you know, asking around anyone that's in the area, maybe the best ways to treat different things that come up, because a lot of it is sort of regional, you know, as far as what people run into. Whether you're in the sand, it's one thing. Whether you're in the mud, it's another thing. We've had winters where the horses are standing in, you know, 6 inches to a foot deep of mud nonstop, and they do fine, but you just have to make sure that you're really adamant about their daily care and keeping an eye on everything.
Okay, so if mud is dry when they come in, you bring them in every day, and there's the mud on them is dry, do you wet that or do you brush it off? Do you wash it off?
We just wash it off. We put them directly into, we have a wash stall, they walk directly into, it's like a car wash, you know, just bring them in, spray it all off, let them dry, and then treat whatever needs to be treated once they're dry.
Okay, so next question, when you said let them dry, you don't dry them off then?
Well, no, because I think especially it depends. If the horses are clipped, it's really easy to towel dry. Mm-hmm. And the toweling obviously can get a lot of the excess, you know, dirt or scabs or anything off. When their horses' legs are wet, I don't feel like towel drying goes a very long way in getting them to dry. So I think it just takes a bit longer for them to air dry, but I think they do. And then we just wait to apply any creams or ointments or powders that they may need. We wait to do that until after everything's dried off.
Okay. Any other advice that comes to mind then, Emily, for this time of year?
I think just asking around. You know, a lot of times the best thing to do is just to keep asking friends or neighbors or other people in the area, you know, what they try and what they do and what works for them, because there are so many different ways you can go about taking care of the horses as the seasons change. And really, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of, we've been doing this quite a long time, and every year I feel like we end up doing something slightly different because it seems to work better, or maybe someone suggested it. Or so it's just keeping an open mind about that, and then just keeping a close eye on the horses.
Absolutely. Knowing the horses very, very well and noticing any small changes then. And also temperature-wise, you know, being cautious of respiratory diseases or colic that may get them, you know, with big changes, even if, you know, if, also if they've relocated as well, if they've moved across country or something. How frequently do you check those vitals yourself, Emily?
Well, I think that we just keep an eye on every time the horses come in and out. I make sure that we just keep a close eye on them, watch that they're eating normally, watch that they're drinking normally. And then if anything pops up, then we'll take their temperatures and go through that whole routine. I'm not one that tends to routinely do a daily check of temperatures. It's more just keeping an eye on the horses and seeing if we notice any changes in them. But again, that comes down to making sure that you've got people around that really know the horses. And, you know, notice any of those little differences.
Yeah, for sure. Be observant. Appearance, behavior, condition, ABC of horse management.
Right.
Super. Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed, Emily, for taking time to do this. Always appreciate your observant and your observations, your ideas and suggestions. So greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Happy to help.
And joining me now is Emily's husband, Jeff Bashir, to share his perspective as a veterinarian on what to look for as the season changes. Jeff, thank you for joining me and taking time to do this.
Happy to be here.
Well, this, of course, is a season where the weather changes sometimes drastically from hot weather to colder weather. And our members obviously worried, no doubt, about making it, you know, making all the right choices for their horses. So I wanted to talk about some of the things that they should be aware of when the weather changes in the fall season. Shall we start with the horses that are in work and maybe have been traveling, Jeff? What do you see when you're out in the field?
Well, I think there's several things. I think anytime you have dramatic weather shifts, either from warm to cold or cold to warm, everybody always worries about colic. I think that's universal. I don't think that's dependent on it being a show horse or a traveling horse. But I think watching water intake, obviously watching appetite, water being the most important this time of year as we start to get cold at night, I think people have to be very aware that water outside freezes and you have to make sure your horses have available fresh water at all times. The next thing I probably worry about is the respiratory viruses. I think you get a lot more fevers this time of year, and especially when you have a sudden change in weather. And that would bother me more with the traveling horses. Obviously, they're more exposed. With the FEI especially, we have to be very careful because they're constantly checking temperatures. And then lastly, I think any horses, especially in the eventing world, we worry about tying up. I think probably more related to barometric pressure changes than temperature, but it does seem that we get more tying up episodes when we have dramatic changes in weather.
What are the things that riders and owners can do then to safeguard against these things? Obviously, be mindful of those three most important things to look out for. Would it be to regularly check the temperature, maybe more than you normally would, maybe twice a day?
It never hurts. Obviously, depending on the barn, that can be fairly labor intensive. I think it's important more to be aware. So I think, you know, counseling your barn staff or if it's you yourself, noticing differences. Horses with even mild fevers tend to look more depressed. They tend to not eat as ravenously. A lot of times they kind of stand around dully rather than, you know, having their ears perked, listening to what's going on around them. So I think number one is just being aware. Number two, I think it's always a good idea to routinely check your waterers. I'm not a big fan of automatic waterers in stalls. Obviously, they're nice from the standpoint that you don't run out, but you also don't know how much they're drinking. So I think it's never a bad idea to kind of monitor your horse's water intake. I think barns get used to what each individual horse does. Most barns, you know, you'll have two full buckets in the stall overnight, and some horses will drain that completely and other horses won't. But I think if you get used to what your normal horse's intake is, that's a good thing. And then lastly, I think, you know, looking at quality and quantity of manure overnight, I think, again, you get used to what your horse normally does. If there's a dramatic shift in the amount of manure in the stall in the morning, or if suddenly your horse's piles become much drier, then you have to worry more about that water intake and some of those things. And, you know, same thing with with tying up. I think it's more being aware. If you're used to what your horse looks like walking out of the stall or how he feels when you first get on him, then you'll notice these things, and then you can kind of pursue the right avenue based on what signs you're seeing.
Basic stable management, really, isn't it? What I like to call ABC, appearance, behavior, and condition. And if you're watching your horses closely, you'll notice any slight changes, won't you? The other thing, of course, is the concentration of proteins and feeds for horses that are in fast work, Jeff. What should we be mindful of, those nutritional changes and the needs of those horses as the season changes and maybe their workload changes, of course, and they may be going out, maybe turned out during the day as well. Maybe we could think about that and what they should look out for.
Certainly. I think a lot of horses, the more work they get into, we tend as owners to feed them more. Obviously, different horses need differing amounts of feed. There seems to be a trend in the feed companies to consistently raise the fat within the feeds, lower the carbohydrates within the feeds, and raise the fiber. So I think that in a general trend is good, because I think it's much safer to feed higher fat, higher fiber feeds in larger amounts. But in the end, I think, you know, hay and roughage is probably more important than anything. And the number one thing that changes this time of year is we lose grass, depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. So I think making sure you have good quality hay. Our horses actually get fed hay in the fields this time of year because there's not enough grass out there. And obviously you don't want them to graze it down to nothing, but it's more important that they have access to something to eat overnight, whether they're in during the day and out overnight or the other way around. So I think, you know, I don't think there's any cookbook that every horse gets this, that, or the other. I think every horse is a little different. I think thoroughbreds are obviously different than warm bloods. There are some horses that survive on air, and there's other horses that you have to feed the entire feed bag to in order to keep them fit enough to do the work they're in. So I think more than anything else, it's being smart and monitoring your horse's weight, monitoring your horse's condition and energy level. And then I would kind of adapt from there. But I think, again, the major thing for me is access to good quality roughage. So if your grass is going away, you offer hay, and you make sure that you offer a hay that's a good enough quality that they're getting some nutrition out of it.
And also those horses that are being let down, being roughed off now at the end of the season, and maybe have a good break now until after Christmas, you also have to take that into effect of letting them down gradually, Jeff, as well, and starting to turn them out more and more. Those nutritional changes as well as the climate changes. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. And I think, again, I remember a class in school when I was young that taught everything in moderation. I don't think you do anything quickly with horses. You can't get them fit quickly and you can't let them down quickly. I think it's maybe not equally, but just as dangerous to take a horse that's fit enough to go run around Kentucky and then turn them out in the field for 3 months as it is to take a horse that's been turned out in the field for 3 months and try to get them ready for Kentucky. I think the goal has to be gradual step down or step up. I think whether that's activity or nutrition. So our horses that are in regular work, even during the times that they are resting, we tend to do what we call active rest. So they'll still go for hacks. They still might do some very light flat work a couple days a week. And then the same thing with the nutrition. If they've been on, you know, 3, 4, 5 quarts of feed twice a day, and then we're going to let them down or at least back off on their work enough that they don't need that much, we just gradually decline. I don't tend to decrease hay or grass consumption. I think that's pretty consistent year round. And most of our horses honestly go out as much as we can turn them out. So, you know, they're out either overnight until it gets really cold. And then when that happens, we try to get them out as much during the day as we can. So for our horses anyways, the amount of turnout doesn't really vary based on the level of competition they're in. It varies more based on the weather and the availability of non-muddy paddocks.
And what if we're transitioning suddenly to a very wet spell, Jeff, when they've been dry, they've been warm, you know, hotter, and they've been in work and they've had that summer heat, and then it suddenly gets very wet, depending on where you are in the country, of course, or it gets very dry, just dry cold. Talk a little bit about the effects on the horses then of those two differences.
Well, again, I mean, I think horses are a lot like people. I think wet and cold tends to cause more problems. I think there's obviously always debates on blanketing, but I think the most important thing is keeping your horses dry. So last year in Virginia, we had an awful winter. We actually had an awful year, just wet nonstop. This year seems to be ridiculously dry, so we obviously get the extremes. I tend to worry more about soundness issues with those things than I do anything else. So if you've got an extremely dry year and then it suddenly gets wet, I think you worry that the feet and the soft tissues and the bones have adapted to that hard ground. And then if they're going out in mud nonstop, obviously those are different forces on the legs and the rest of the body. Likewise, the other way around, if they've been used to soft, wet weather and it suddenly turns hard, then the opposite is true. You're now stressing on a hard ground versus a softer footing. But I think as far as overall health of the horses, we at our barn anyways, are more apt to blanket when it gets wet than when it gets cold. So I right now, none of our horses are in blankets. Obviously, before they go anywhere big, they'll get clipped. But until you start clipping your horses, I think they're perfectly fine without blankets on, as long as it's not raining, or if it's raining, they have shelter. Because I think the one time you really get into trouble with horses is when they get cold and they get wet. That hair mats down, they can't really regulate their temperature as well, and it just makes them more prone to whether it be colic or respiratory viruses or GI bugs or whatever else. So to me, it's about avoiding wet cold more than anything else.
All right. Well, you've touched on there, obviously, the blanketing, which is it can be sometimes a bit of a dilemma, especially if the temperature changes literally from one day to another and then goes back again to the previous temperatures. Any other advice about that? I know you probably will say, well, use your common sense, you know, and judge what your horse is feeling that day. Is there any other advice that you'd like to offer with regard to blanketing?
Yeah, I think in general, I'd rather under blanket than over blanket. Now, that's okay. In a non-clipped horse. I think once you start clipping your horses, if you're going to do that, you have to be more aware of what they need. But I think right now, horses will adapt to the environment. That's what they're meant to do. And I always laugh because, you know, we as veterinarians and farm owners and trainers do all this to build run-in sheds and do all these things to try to keep horses in the way we think they would want to be kept. And inevitably, outside at night in the rain, and they're all standing outside eating. So I tend to err on the side of less blanketing. I would much rather horses are more easily able to deal with hot weather without a blanket on than cold weather without a blanket on. So if you don't have the capability of pulling blankets and changing blankets, then I think you're much better to not blanket at all until you clip your horses. And then again, I think you have to be more aware at that point. But a non-clipped animal, I mean, lots of horses never get blanketed. I'd say in general, our horses, until they're clipped, they get blanketed when it's very cold at night and it's rainy, but not when it's just very cold.
All right. And any other advice then, Jeff, apart from telling us why horses don't use a run-in shed when it's the worst weather?
Any other advice? I mean, I think you have to offer them shelter, obviously. And I think that the smartest thing to do is, turn out based on availability of shelter. If you have run-in sheds and you have decent paddocks, I think horses can be out year-round. I think if you don't have run-in sheds and you're in an area that gets a lot of snow or a lot of wet weather at night, then I think you're probably better to switch to a in overnight out during the day. I think that, like I said, the issue is you can't anthropomorphize, but so much. Horses aren't like people. They don't care so much about the weather as long as it's consistent, as in if they're out all the time, they get used to it. If you leave them in the barn and then suddenly turn them out, then they have a harder time. So in general, more turnout is always better. I would say beyond extreme weather, as in, terrible storms or terrible snow, obviously terrible cold or terrible heat. I think all horses do better outside of a barn rather than in it.
Terrific. Well, Jeff, thank you very much for taking time to do this. We really appreciate it. There's some sound advice there for our members.
Happy to do it.
And now, finally, in our series of past presidents, as we celebrate our 60th anniversary, we hear from Kevin Baumgartner, who was president from 2008 to 2010. Kevin, thank you for joining me. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, we're going to take a look in your rearview mirror now, take you back a few years to your presidency from the December 2007, of course, for the years 2008 to 2010. Not that long ago, so presumably your memory is quite fresh of the events that transpired during your tenure.
I remember quite a bit of it, yes.
What were the sort of milestones that you had, or your major agenda items that you inherited from Kira, then Kevin, that you knew you were going to have to put on your desk when you got started?
Well, Kira, and I'm glad you start with Kira because she brought together just a tremendous team. And I think that there was a lot of teamwork involved. And there were two things that I think were a focus. One was bringing the association really into the 21st century. And in January of 2005, early in Kira's presidency, we had a strategic planning session where we did things like work out how to move forward with technology, with our website, with promoting the sport, but also with, you know, with important substantive issues like safety. And so Kira started that ball rolling, and I think handed it off to me, and with a lot of the same team in place. And I'm proud of what we did on that. Safety was certainly important. Another thing that was very important, and I think, you know, one thing we always have to remember about the sport of eventing in the United States is that it's, you know, 12,000 people. I mean, it depends on how you count. How many compete is fewer than 12,000, at least in recognized events. But certainly the number of people who are involved heavily in the sport, it's not that many in a country of over 325 million people. And so one of the most important things to us was holding the sport together, the upper levels, the lower levels, the people who compete, the officials, the owners, everyone is a stakeholder in the sport, keeping them together. And I think that when you look holistically at the financial situation that we inherited, and we tried to regularize in terms of the areas and the safety issues, which were, you know, which were considerable, and they always are, and there's something that always takes a lot of attention anytime that you're dealing with animals, anytime that you're in a sport like ours, and also the issues of keeping people together and making sure that everyone has a voice in the sport. And those are the things that were most important to me during my presidency.
Did you have, if you will, your own agenda, that items that you wanted to address during your presidency, Kevin, or did you feel that, because most presidents seem to bring their own, you know, personality and their own thoughts on the direction of the sport. Did you have those, or did you feel that there was so much on your plate that you had to continue the work of past presidents?
Well, you know, two things. I mean, one is there was a lot in terms of safety that was on our plate going in, and we worked on that very hard. The second thing is, and I mentioned the financial situation, the Great Recession hit in 2008, the first year of my presidency, in September of 2008. And so that was, in terms of making sure that we continued with our services, continued to keep the sport strong during an economic downturn, that was something that obviously wasn't totally anticipated, but we had to work with. And one of the things, you know, again, that I'm proud of with our team is that we did not throttle back, really. We didn't say, well, gee, we're in a, you know, tough economic times. We should stop moving forward with progressive programs that are helping our horses and our riders and the health of our sport overall. We continued with those. So that was something that we kind of did on the fly, and I think was part of my agenda, but certainly not my agenda going in. I would say that going into the presidency, you know, and again, going back to what I mentioned to begin with, my number one agenda was keeping the sport together. I think that there was a sense in the latter part of the first decade of this century that the upper levels and the lower levels were spinning apart to some extent and had different goals and different, and of course they do have different goals in many ways, but that those goals were kind of irreconcilable. And one thing that we tried very hard to do was outreach to kind of both sides of the sport. By the way, I want to say, just as a pitch to Carol Kozlowski, I'm very proud of her, what she's done on this too. I think that keeping the various stakeholders in the sport involved and together, and particularly, you know, with a sport where almost everyone's a type A, it seems like, you know, a bunch of people who like to gallop over fixed obstacles, you're not going to find a lot of shrinking violets. And so everyone, you know, has an opinion, and that's good. And I think everyone has something to give, even when there are, you know, some other times that, you know, that maybe have difficulty dealing with them. And I thought that one of my skills that I brought to the table and that was important to me was not to be in a position where by governance I was trying to make, you know, my group or, if you took a group I belong to, I guess it'd be, you know, upper level adult amateurs. I wasn't trying to make that the focus of my presidency. What I was trying to make the focus was recognizing the contribution everyone can make and trying to knit the sport together. And a lot of that I did, I think, through personal interactions. And someone I will say who was very instrumental in working with me on that was David O'Connor, who was the president of the USEF at that time.
Just, I should have asked you this before, Kevin, what aspects of the sport you had been involved in, apart from being on the Board of Governors, obviously, prior to your presidency, but what aspects of the sport were you involved with yourself prior to your presidency?
Right. I was on the Board of Governors. I'd been on the USEF Eventing Committee for a number of years, too. I'd been the area chair of Area 7, which is the Northwest, back, I think it was like 99 to 02, and that was really where I got started in the administrative side of the sport. I'd been a competitor. I started competing actually in 93. I actually came very late to this sport. I'd never been on a horse before I was 30 years old, and my wife suggested we take horseback riding lessons, and it was in 1989, actually, and we ended up just becoming completely absorbed by the sport and just loving it. I remember when I realized really what eventing was, while, you know, still being obviously very ignorant of really what it took to be a competitor or anyone involved in the sport. I remember thinking, you know, this is just a perfect sport. It's such a wonderful mix. I love animals. It's a wonderful way to commune with another animal. I thought it's you know, something that is real, where you're not handed a, you know, kind of a fraudulent ribbon at the end. You know, you really work for it and you don't always get rewarded, and it's kind of like life that way, and it's just a great group of people and a great group of horses. So I remember getting involved in that, and by the time I became president in 2007, I'd actually I'd gone intermediate and advanced and 2 and 3 star on horses by then, was just, you know, again, just completely besotted with the sport. I'd also, I guess the various hats that I've worn. I mean, I'm now an owner, an upper level owner. Tammy Smith is riding Wembley. Rode him at Rolex. We went to badminton, and then he got an abscess and couldn't compete this past year. But we're hoping to repeat that journey and be a little more successful in 2020. But also another hat that I'd worn, I'd been an attorney involved in a disciplinary proceeding that was, I thought, very unfairly brought against, you know, wonderful writer and wonderful person, Amy Tryon. And that was in 2007. That was just before I became president. I was on the Board of Governors actually during that time as well. So I guess I've seen some various aspects of the sport, and I always have tried to bring to it, an attitude that everyone is a contributor. I also had seen the official side of the sport. I've never been an official. I'm certainly not a licensed official, but, you know, I've been on the ad hoc review committees at events, and I've kind of been privileged to be a part of the group of officials when they are getting briefings at the Rolex now Land Rover Kentucky event and other events, and I've always really admired the knowledge and dedication people bring to it. So I think coming into the presidency, I was on a steep learning curve, but I was still learning.
What did you enjoy about your presidency then and feel that you'd have achieved? Did you have any targets or any personal targets that you wanted to reach during that time then that you would hope would be your legacy, Kevin?
Well, one thing that I think was really important to all of us during that time frame was the safety aspects of the sport. And we got a lot done, tightening the qualifications to move up the levels and putting in literally de-qualifying criteria as well, empowering officials, you know, to act, at the moment when they see something that they think is dangerous riding or potentially detrimental to the sport. Frangible jumps, the movement toward that, and the USEA has been very involved in that. And just the other horse welfare aspects, the cardiovascular study, the Equine Medical Research Fund, I would be happy if people, you know, remembered me when they remember some of those things and hopefully the benefits that will be and have been reaped from those.
Well, as you said, you know, there's a tremendous community around our sport and certainly around the membership and then the officials, everybody involved. I'm wondering if you want to share any special moments, Kevin, that meant a lot to you whilst you were president.
Well, I think, one of the moments that I remember is has to do with Joe Whitehouse. I mean, Joe, to me, was the unsung hero when Kira was president and when I was president as well. I would see her in her office because I'd visit Leesburg frequently. We'd be on the phone almost every day. And I think Joe was just, she certainly deserves her position in the Hall of Fame because she absorbed so much of kind of the white noise that was happening during that time frame, not only on these issues I'm talking about, like safety or like the divisions within the sport, but also just when something happened that was unfair to, for instance, a child participating and the parent would want to vent, she really held us together and was the glue. And so in many ways, one of my fondest memories was being back in Leesburg and Joe being in her office and Joe getting a couple of calls, just random calls, and seeing how skillfully she handled these situations and made everyone feel like they were part of it. And that was part of my learning curve. I mean, I understood that was actually while I was president-elect before I became president, and I understood how much kind of love for the sport and for the horses and for the people and diplomacy it really takes to hold this together. And I think it's a legacy that my successors and my predecessors as president have upheld as well. So that was important to me to see that.
Well, if you were to leave a note in your desk, as is tradition in the Oval Office, Kevin, what would that be for our incoming president, president-elect at the moment, Max Corcoran?
Well, first, I would congratulate her and the sport on selecting her. I think that she's going to do a dynamite job. But what I would say to Max is, above all, keep the sport together. That to me is job one. Job one is to make sure that every adult amateur who rides at whatever level, and every Olympic rider and everyone in between understands we're all on the same team. And I think that if you accomplish that, the strength and the integrity of our people in our sport, and just the beauty of the sport, and there's just the wondrous nature of the horses, I think that will hold things together really well.
Wonderful. Great message there, Kevin. Thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your memories of your presidency, and thank you for your contribution to the USEA.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
And if you missed any of the previous conversations that we had with past presidents, you can find them all on the USCA podcast channel on any podcast app. And still to come in this series, we'll hear from Brian Sabo, Diane Pitts, and of course the current president, Carol Kozlowski. Be sure to follow along on social media at US Eventing Association to keep up with all the latest news on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And for more detailed information, of course, please visit the website at useventing.com. Until the next time, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.